I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. As the Kansas City mayor's race draws near, a dozen candidates are campaigning for your vote. Henry Klein might not be the most recognizable name. We'll find out why the underdog is not letting that deter him. Today, a conversation about how this bank manager would change the city should he get the opportunity to be mayor. Then, Kansas City is known historically as one of the most racially segregated cities in America. That's changing slowly as more minorities move to predominantly white suburban neighborhoods. What's attracting the diverse group of newcomers there, and what troubles are they facing? We'll ask on Up to Date after this hour's news. Henry Klein has run for Kansas City mayor a couple of times before. Will the third time be the charm? Henry Klein is one of a dozen candidates seeking the job this year. He's a branch manager for Bank of America at 63rd and Prospect. It's a job that Klein says allows him to help people every day. In past runs for mayor, Klein has emphasized the need to improve city schools, even though the mayor has no direct role. He's also proposed eliminating the earnings tax on small businesses. What's he advocating now? We're about to find out as Henry Klein joins me here in the studio. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Hey, thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the show.
Here we go again. So why a third try for the city's highest office?
Well, just a little bit of background on myself. You're right. I have run two times before. I've lived here in Kansas City for over 30 years. I've been board president for Habitat for Humanity here. I've been on the advisory board of Operation Breakthrough. But this time around probably has crystallized my thinking more than any other time. And so here's the bold statement that answers your question. Kansas City is succeeding in spite of our local government institutions and not because of them.
How so?
Well, so let's talk about three areas that I think are really important. And it kind of gets to a little bit of what you brought up in your intro. Let's talk about the KC Police Department. Let's talk about KC Public Schools. And let's talk about KC City Government.
Right.
I am going to advocate very, very strongly that we have local control of Kansas City Police Department. We've talked about this. There's some folks that are going to say, no, it's been going just fine as it is. It keeps the local politics out. Other folks are going to kind of agree with where
that's
I'm going.
That's the argument. Yeah.
That's the argument. I don't agree with the argument. You know, I work in the inner city, and I know how long it takes sometimes just to get a response. So if I'm unhappy with that kind of a situation, who do I complain to? Well, we got a board of commissioners, as you well know. Sly is one of those commissioners because he's mayor and he automatically gets one appointment. But you've also got four or five others. They're appointed by the governor. So we are one of the only cities in the United States that does not have local control of its police department.
We are the only major city, Henry.
The only one.
Yeah.
So consequently, the bottom line is that we need to have some kind of local representation of who controls the police department. Here's the thing I want to make clear.
I mean, what the argument is that we do have local representation. The governor appoints them.
The governor appoints people who maybe are local in the sense that they live here, but are they local in the sense they're responsible to the people of Kansas City? That's the question. So here's the thing. Dave Helling wrote a very interesting article about two or three months ago, back in November, about the fact that we have got control and responsibility for all the different things that we need done here in Kansas City. It's so spread out and so muted and so diluted that you hardly can get anything done. If you're going to sit here and say, well, I'm a candidate and I want to have some kind of local community policing type of thing, well, you can go and possibly go to that particular police station, maybe plead with them to let us have some type of local community policing type of a process. But it's not institutionalized and it's not part of the structure. So what I would suggest, if we're concerned about having too much control with one individual, i.e. the mayor, then why can't we elect those board of commissioners as opposed to having them appointed by by the governor? So way people have a place to go.
So you would create another board as opposed to just giving control to the city council.
I would leave the board in place that's here today, but it would be elected by local populace.
Well, why not let the city council oversee it?
That's not a bad idea, and I could go that way. In other words, any of the things that we talk about today aren't a function of, well, it has to be done this exact way. I'm trying to get to a point in a principle that we need to have more local control of a lot of the things, or at least local institutionalized involvement in what's happening. So,
how much difference would it make if it was locally controlled as opposed to local control through the police board and governor appointments?
Well, okay. So again, I'm saying governor appointment makes no sense at all. And what I am saying is, so therefore, if I have a representative who is my local commissioner, let's say we do it by districts, or maybe we do it at large, but however we do it, if I'm able to go to that person and say, hey, look, here's the problems that are having here, I can have a greater expectation that that person is going to then go back to the board and try to implement some of those concerns. Whereas I don't have that sense that that's what's happening now. What am I supposed to do when we make a call and the police don't even answer the phone for 5+ minutes? And believe me, that happens here today. I want to make one thing clear. I'm not trying to insult the people that work in those institutions. They are fine, fine men and women who are trying very hard to do their job every day. Mm-hmm. But what their direction is and where they're going may not be the same direction as what we need here in Kansas City.
So, two points there. Yeah. I mean, the argument would be then we need more call takers in our 911 system to make sure those calls are answered more quickly. The problem with not answering 911 calls promptly is shared by every resident in this community.
Yeah, I'm afraid it may be disproportionately so on the east side, but I don't have statistics to prove that, but I'm mm-hmm. certainly worried and concerned about it. And I think that you'd find a whole lot more responsiveness by that part of the community if we had better local control where they felt they were their voices.
Do we need to hire more employees?
Well, you always need to hire more employees, but how do I get that point across if I've got commissioners that are being appointed by the governor? They may not feel that way at all, and they may feel mm-hmm. that they can do however they please because all they need to do is please the governor at that point.
You know, one final point here before we move on.
Yeah.
Every single Kansas City, Missouri police chief going back 20, 30 years would look you in the eye and say, going to local control, Henry Klein, would be a big mistake. My job then becomes one of a politician as opposed to making the best decisions I can make to reduce violent crime in this community.
And I would absolutely disagree with that. And I would tell you the best thing could happen is if they did have local control, but that would require local responsibility now. They would be accountable to us locally. And that's exactly why they don't want this, because they don't want to be accountable locally. And so you're right, they're going to fight it every step of the way. And so in your intro this morning, earlier this morning about me being the underdog, the positions I'm going to take are going to be underdog positions. Mm-hmm. They're going to be come from an outsider's point of view instead of from an insider's point of view. Let's talk about, if you don't mind me moving over to KC Public Schools. You know, we don't, I'm not necessarily advocating for the mayor or the city council has to be in some kind of control of Kansas City Public Schools, but we need to have an institutionalized role as to how we help. One of the things that I would tell you, and granted, you wouldn't necessarily have to have.
I mean, why do you need the mayor? Why does the mayor need to help? I mean, that you have a school district, you have a school board, you have a local tax levy that funds the board. Why do you need more help than
that?
I
am deeply concerned that what the Kansas City public school system and maybe some of the others, there's 13 total public school systems that are attached to Kansas City in one
right.
form or another. But I'm deeply concerned that some of them aren't able to meet the needs. And as mayor, why would you want to be mayor? I mean, Steve, this is the question I think every candidate should have to answer. Why would you even want to be mayor if you're not going to play some major role in education? And I'm not well, – let's talk about pre-K in just a minute or two. But
yeah.
for the moment, I want to stay on this subject.
Well, what major role do you advocate?
Okay. So out in Ohio, everybody knows who LeBron James is. So LeBron James opens his new public school in Akron, one of the greatest moments of his life. I'm reading from a USA Today article. And it goes on, just one quick sentence of it. It meets the basic definition, of course, but not only will James' I Promise School help some of Akron's most challenged students with education support, it will provide education, career, and educational support for parents. Now, I used to be on the advisory committee for Operation Breakthrough, so we see a little bit of a model that looks a little bit like that there.
Mm-hmm.
But why couldn't the mayor and or the city council be involved in bringing these kind of concepts to Kansas City? By the way, this school is actually a public school, so we're not trying to necessarily go the charter route. I'm not establishing a statement about charters one way or another here right now. I'm mm-hmm. just simply saying this school that LeBron put together is actually part of the public school system. But what we're trying to understand is that we've got unique needs here in the inner city that I'm not convinced are being met the way they need to. Again, not because I'm sitting here saying they're bad teachers.
But we have a school superintendent who has experience in urban districts across the country attempting to lead the district. You have a state school board that oversees a state with two very large metro communities and, in theory, in principle, is attuned to the needs in those districts. And you have a state legislature that doesn't fully fund transportation budgets and sometimes doesn't fully fund the foundation formula, although it has in recent years. And that lack of funding, to hear superintendents talk about it, is a big issue.
All right. So lack of funding. I don't know the exact numbers, but the last time that I had looked into this, it looked like what we had for funding per pupil was actually relatively high compared to other inner city schools. But having said, I'm still back to my same premise. And you can challenge it all you want. And I understand that as I get out there in the forums and as we talk to more folks, they're going to challenge it as well. But coming from my perspective, we are not serving those kids the way we need to be serving those kids. And I'm not blaming the teachers. I'm not blaming the people involved. I'm saying that there's help that needs to be had. And so one of the things that I want to do.
Yeah, again, the argument will be, how many cooks do you want in the kitchen? You got superintendents.
I think you want your mayor actively involved. And I think that anybody who was looking on the outside, looking in and saying, hey, we've got a serious problem here, but the mayor doesn't have any involvement in that. I think a lot of folks, and this goes back to Dave Helling's article, which I thought was one of the best articles I've read in a long time about this very subject. Mm-hmm. We can have the same structure we're having right now, but you make the mayor a figurehead. And I can't imagine wanting to be mayor and be a figurehead. Again, if you go back to Dave's article, he's very specific about that, and he states it very clearly. The mayor is really just a figurehead role. I don't want that role to be that way any longer. I want to take some initiative and take some responsibility. So what will happen is at City Hall, we will have in my office a project board, because this is what we do in the private sector. And I've been part of three Fortune 500 private sector businesses, and that brings a very different perspective than I think some of the other folks have. And on that project board, we're going to say, here's what we need to get done, and here are the different projects we're going after. One of the questions that your producer asked me beforehand to possibly address is, how did I feel Sly was doing? Now, I think Sly is going to look back and say, I wish I had gotten more done. I think that's probably one of the biggest things I'd also like to interject. I don't want any more of these votes that are not citywide when we've got issues related to issues like light rail, where we've got issues that would potentially impact us all citywide. But going back to what I said initially, Sly, I think, is going to regret that he didn't get more done in his term. Well, so we're at the tail end of Sly's term.
Let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to Up to Date. I'm visiting with Henry Klein, who's a candidate for Kansas City mayor. Tell us about Sly James.
Yeah. So Sly is at the tail end of his term, and he's now trying to push for pre-K school. Fabulous goal. I completely agree with the goal. But did we not need pre-K 8 years ago when Sly got into office? That would be one of the very big such as's. And Sly's goal is fantastic. I think the methodology is completely wrong.
Methodology meaning?
Meaning he wants to add to the sales tax.
Right.
And I want to go on record right now as saying, I won't say never, but I am very against any more additions to sales tax. It is a regressive tax. In other words, it hurts the poor more than it does anybody. And in Sly's case—
So you're going to vote against this plan?
I need to see the whole plan before we do it, but my likelihood is on that basis. But I don't. Here's the thing. I don't want to let the perfect become the enemy of the good. However, yes, my likelihood is that I will vote against it. But voting against it doesn't mean that I'm not in favor of pre-K. I'm greatly in favor of pre-K, but I don't want to create this, and I'm going to call it this, a slush fund that then people can go get after to go to whatever school they want to go to do pre-K. Mm-hmm. I want this to have much more structure to it so that we can understand what it's doing for our students and hopefully, you know, measure it and feel good that it's doing the things that
it needs
to be done.
Well, I think if the mayor was sitting here, he would tell you that's exactly what this plan is going to do. And others would argue that if you turn this plan down, it's going to be 10, 15, 20 years until this community comes back to early childhood education on a citywide ballot and we make another run at it.
No, so here's the difference. I disagree. Sly's done a great job of getting this publicized. It is an absolute need. It doesn't mean that just because we turn one, you know, in other words, we get so desperate to take on something mean, the airport, which we need to get into a minute here as well. We get so desperate to take on something that we're willing to vote for any plan that gets on there for the very argument that you just made, which is if we don't take this plan, we're not going to get another one later on. My candidacy is absolutely going to be committed to pre-K funding of schooling. I just would like to see it done through the public school system as opposed to, again, what Sly does and where the plan is very different.
You want the superintendents to have buy-in, which they don't. They say they don't have
now. You got it, Stephen. You said it better than I could have.
Yeah.
Now, finally, the other thing I want to talk about in terms of where things would go differently is Kansas City's government. Right now, I couldn't even begin to tell you why you would want to structure the way it is. If you're a citizen and you come to me and say, hey, I'm unhappy if my streets aren't plowed or my roads are bad or whatever, you can come to the mayor all you want, and most people would think that's who you should come to, but honestly, probably would be the city manager. So, but the city manager is basically reports to 13 people, if you will, the city council. The council probably likes that, and that's probably why it stayed this way as long as it has. However, it really needs to be a corporate structure. The mayor is the CEO. The city manager is the chief operating officer.
You want a strong mayor form of government in Kansas City.
Again, you said it better than I could have. That's exactly what I want to see happen. And then we've got accountability. What we've got right now, and I think for a lot of politicians, I think they're very happy with this lack of accountability, whether it be what's going on with the school system or what's going on with the police department or what's happening in city government. You just see this diffuse, no accountability structure that somebody from the private sector couldn't possibly tolerate. And, you know, there is an axiom here that I want you to understand that I see. In city government, what we see is people, we don't expect, what was I going to say?
It happens.
No. In the private sector, we underpromise and we overdeliver. In the public sector, we overpromise and underdeliver, okay? And that's what I'm trying to get away from. This airport is a really great example of that. I think it started off with just what you just said. We put something up on the board for folks to vote for, and we were so desperate as a people and so wanting to have something else happen for the airport that we voted for something. That something was a very vague plan that didn't have the kind of parameters that you would have liked to have seen around it. And now it's going from potentially, and I understand these estimates are all over the place,
right?
But from a $1 billion project to a $2 billion project. In the private sector, you lose your job for pulling a stunt like that. In the public sector, maybe you're going to get elected mayor because of that. And I think that's wrong.
Let's turn to a couple of issues. I think people will be curious to know what you're going to do on certain specific things. How about affordable housing? It's a big issue right now before the city council. What do you want to see happen there, and where would the money come to begin to address that issue?
Yeah, okay. So a couple of things. One, I was board president for Habitat for Humanity here in Kansas City, so I'm a big believer in affordable housing. And when I was on the board with Habitat, I had a chance to talk to Mayor Cleaver when he was doing his Green Zone initiative. And one of the things that we talked about, and they're actually doing this in Louisville, is taking it on a block-by-block approach. So let's give a hypothetical block. That block maybe has two vacant lots. It has four, five, six houses that are owned and lived in but maybe need some repair work. And then it's got a couple others that are possibly abandoned but might be good candidates for being rehabilitated like we did at Habitat. Couldn't we go through this on a block-by-block basis and try to implement that kind of thing? Congressman Cleaver was a big advocate of this, liked the idea quite a bit. It's just the coordination and the ability to try to make it happen sometimes is
If you go block by block, which is an interesting plan, wouldn't that take about 194 years?
Well, it depends on how many blocks we're talking about, and it depends on how much leverage
can we assume.
I mean, Kansas City is a very big geographic place. There's no question about that. But the other thing, the answer is, yes, that could take a long time, but we've got to start somewhere. And I do think conceptually what I don't want to do is get this gentrification problem going where all of a sudden people aren't able to live in the blocks that they live in now.
Well, block by block, that's great.
But there's a second point to this.
Where do you get the money, Henry? I mean, city council is talking about trust funds, $75 million for a trust fund. And you ask them where that money is going to come from, and they say, we don't know, we're looking. And where do you go to get dollars for this?
Okay, so there's public.
No matter what the plan is.
There's public sector, there's private sector, and there's nonprofit sector. So if you want to, you could look at all three of those. And that's what we were attempting to do at Habitat. Kansas City is interesting because it has so many organizations here that if we could understand and tap into, like Habitat, the right ones, we could get, they raise funds. The city will come up with some funds. We'll look at possibly national grants to that nature. But these aren't necessarily large dollar projects, and some of them can actually turn not so much a profit, but if you're able to rehab and sell those houses back out, you can use those funds to, again, try to do it the next block and go by block, by block. But here's the second piece of it, and probably the one that I think you're going to be more interested in hearing about. Right now, it feels a little bit like a giant sucking sound in terms of what is happening to Kansas City. Take Cordish. They live out they're out in Maryland. Take Broadmoor, who's going to be involved in the airport. They're out in Maryland. So it feels like all of a huge amount of our resources are ultimately going to be taken away from Kansas City and go to some corporations in Maryland. Mm-hmm. In the case of our friends in Cordish, who now have gotten another sweet tax deal for another set of buildings that they're going to put up in the downtown area, why can't we, from the next projects that go from here on out, yes, we're going to do development. Yes, we need to do development. And to one of the questions y'all had in advance of this was, development needs to happen outside of the plaza and maybe even outside of the downtown.
Right.
But what we're going to do is we're going to ask them for certain funds, and we're going to say, hey, here's project shovel-ready projects, or come up with your own other alternate projects, but you're not going to get these kind of tax benefits anymore without putting something back into the community that has been so incredibly good to you. In the case of Cordish—
So you want an incentive, you got to give back.
That's what you want, an incentive.
But the deal with Cordish was they came along at a time when nobody was approaching Kansas City about redeveloping its downtown, and we had to give them a good deal to entice them to come here.
I'm fine with that, but part of that good deal was that the sales tax revenue was going to cover the bonds mm-hmm. that were part of this good deal, and that didn't happen. So $15 to $20 million a year goes to help pay the difference in those bonds. So we're supplementing the downtown to the tune of $15 or $20 million a year. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't have done that.
Right.
I'm suggesting that let's learn a lesson. Every time in my business life, and every time you make a mistake or something doesn't happen the way you expected it to, at least let's learn a lesson from that and move forward. And again, what I'm telling you is we have got to ask from these corporations, let's have them do the great things that they're doing. Let's have them build the great buildings or rehab the buildings, but they've got to put back into the community. And we as a city government have to define what that really means
mm-hmm.
and give them some very specific types of solutions that they can go after. And then let's have the flexibility to let them come up with their own as well. And if it meets certain guidelines that we're comfortable with, that's how we would do it.
Henry Klein is a candidate for mayor. We're visiting him with him about his platform as he goes forward here. Let's turn to crime, Henry, because it remains such a big issue. You know, obviously, even though it's early, the city is already on track to top 100 homicides again this year based on our first month's totals. We're at 9 already. In the past, you proposed hiring an additional 100 police officers. Is that still the Henry Klein plan?
Well, more resources are definitely part of it. But, Steve, let's start off with a first premise here. Every night when I watch the news, I have two prayers whenever I see something violent that's happened. One, that nobody got hurt, and two, that it didn't happen in Kansas City.
Well, it's not going to be on the news unless somebody got hurt,
well,
Henry. Yeah.
Probably true. But so in any case, those are the things I would love to not see happen anymore. So how do we go at this? More resources, yes. I won't define it necessarily as 100, but I'll define it as once we have a local police board, we can establish what are the resources they need from us and really understand that and apply that. But more importantly, there is no silver bullet that's going to solve this problem, okay? It's going to come from the very things I'm talking about, having City Hall intimately involved with education. I didn't say take over the school system. That's not what I'm suggesting. But have it have an institutionalized, real reason for existing and helping the mm-hmm. schools here in Kansas City. Because it starts at this young age where we've got to help these kids at a young age so that they don't turn to this situation. Obviously, every candidate's going to say, well, we got to create more jobs here in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? If we focus on schools, if we really focused on schools, remember my premise, Kansas City is succeeding in spite of our local institutions, not because of them. If we had schools that did what they needed to do, if we had a police department that was truly more responsive to the local needs. Now, that's my conjecture. Well, I didn't say it's yours, but it's mine.
If schools are so important, are you saying that resources, city tax dollars need to flow to the local school districts to make them the districts they need to be?
Well, here's what I'm really saying, and the part I haven't had a chance to really enumerate and expand upon. What I really want is I want to have a commission that we appoint that has a 6 to 9 month duration, nothing more than that. And I want to do it for all three of these topics, whether it be the schools, police department, or some of the other issues that I'm trying to tackle. They're going to come up with recommendations that really make sense. I have my own predisposed notions of what I think needs to happen here in mm-hmm. Kansas City. But I don't want to be the be-all expert that knows exactly what needs to be done, but rather let these folks tell us what needs to be done, and then we can decide how we integrate it into the city. And then, like I said, I want it institutionalized.
But you're running for mayor, and people want to know what your plan is. I mean, setting up a commission, that's a plan.
Okay, but
where do you want to go?
Okay, well, I've talked about it. I want active involvement in city and schools here in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've even talked about the LeBron James I Promise example, which, by the way, I haven't had the chance, and we won't get to expound upon even more, but it is such an incredibly exciting type of program or proposition that when people come to read about it, and we'll post it up on my website here shortly for people to do that with. It is going to change the dynamic because it's more than just putting a teacher into a classroom. It's understanding what these kids at risk really truly need and trying to truly deal with that on a very different level than what we probably can expect from our school system
today. But, you know, you talk to school – I don't mean to be difficult, Henry, but you talk to school teachers about this. They understand exactly what these kids are up against. Mark Bedell knows exactly what's going on in the homes and the lives of these kids, and they're doing all kinds of things to help them, from teachers paying out of pocket for a meal for those kids before, you know, school begins or after school, or buying them a jacket or whatever. All of those things are happening.
I think of, first off, as I've had these conversations, I think a more candid conversation with a set of school teachers in, let's take Kansas City, Missouri Public Schools again, a candid conversation where they know there wouldn't be any retribution for what they're saying would tell you that they don't have the resources they need to help all the different kids with the various different kinds
and,
of needs.
And where's that money going to come from?
Well, again,
under Mayor Henry Klein.
Again, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about doing other types of schools. But what I'm still suggesting to you again is, one, if it has to be ultimately through taxes, if I think the voters of Kansas City – hear me out on this. I think if the voters of Kansas City are okay – and Lord only knows we've put enough taxes on ourselves already. But I think the voters of Kansas City are ready for this as long as they can see the light at the end of the tunnel as to what exactly it's going to accomplish.
Okay. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. That's Henry Klein. He's a candidate for Kansas City mayor, one of 12 candidates on the April primary ballot. That vote will narrow the list down to two. The final vote will happen in June. Henry, thanks for taking some
time.
Steve,
I really appreciate
your
time as well.
I appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
You bet. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Blue Springs and people of color moving into Blue Springs and how it's changing that community. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, our panel of journalists discussed the bottom line political issues in Kansas and Missouri, from the performance of Governors Kelly and Parson to the Kansas City mayor's race. Get all caught up at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, will Kansas City see a high-tech development near 18th and Vine? And what's with the new Scientology sign atop a building in the crossroads? We'll ask downtown reporter Kevin Collison about those and other changes to the Kansas City landscape. Well, we're beginning to see a shift in the metropolitan and suburban areas surrounding Kansas City as more minorities and people of color move towards better opportunities. The average black neighborhood, which used to be 5% Hispanic, is now 10%. And the core of Kansas City and Kansas City, Kansas, that used to be 53% black, is now 43%. Basically, white neighborhoods are becoming a little less white. Blue Springs has been one of the most segregated areas in America, but not anymore. Integration has improved within the last 10 years, but it's far from being a true melting pot. The increased integration also came with some social intolerance. In 2017, the city saw a series of racially charged incidents, from racial taunting in the schools, neighborhoods, and even at one local business. With us today is Carson Ross. He's the mayor of Blue Springs and a former state representative. Carson, good to have you again. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you, Steve.
James Price is the owner of Turnin' Heads Barbershop. And James, nice to have you too.
Thank you.
Mayor, how much has Blue Springs changed in the past few years? What are you seeing out there?
Well, you know, as far as diversity is concerned, my family was, I think, around the fifth or sixth black family to move to Blue Springs 45 years ago.
No kidding.
And
today?
And today, the population of Blue Springs is probably the population of Blue Springs is around 55,000, but probably about 5 to 6% African-American.
And so it's changing. That 5 or 6% has moved in, when, the last decade mostly, or what are you seeing?
I think it's been a gradual increase, because one of the things that caused my wife and I to move there 45 years ago, and I think it still holds true today, and it's regardless of if you're African-American or whatever your race is, mm-hmm. is because of affordable housing and our educational system.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two driving factors.
What's happened that's brought more people of color to your community? I mean, you're saying those two are the
biggest factors.
Anything else? Those
are your biggest factors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think everything else is just residuals.
How's the community handling it, Carson?
I think that community is handling it well. Because one of the things I've always advocated, even when I was on the special committee during desegregation, if you want real integration, then you have to be in the neighborhoods. You got to get to know each other. You got to be next door to somebody. Then you really get to know people.
Yeah. You know, James Price, you're the owner of Turning Heads in Blue Springs, the barbershop there. How do you think the community is handling it? I mean, what made you open your barbershop where you did?
Well, I would say first, I think the community is, like you said, a lot of people are coming out because of the education system. Me too.
Mm-hmm.
I moved my family out. Just trying to do something different and get away from a lot of the temptations, you know, that are in the city. Mm-hmm. I gave my life to Christ in 2004, and I just wanted to move away from all the things that were trying to bring me back into a lifestyle that I didn't want to be a part of.
So you're a Kansas City kid originally?
Yes. Well, I moved here when I was 11, but military kid, so I lived everywhere. But for the most part, my mother is from Kansas City, so
right.
we came here when I was 11.
Right.
I'm 35 now. So mm-hmm. I've been a part of the, you know, metro area for so many years until I moved out to Blue Springs in 2007.
Right.
So I've been there for roughly 12 years. And when I initially moved out there, I heard about the school system. At the time, my son was like 3. Wasn't really worried about the schools, but until the point where he started going to school, that I knew he was in the right place. Mm-hmm. And it was family-oriented. Just everything that I wanted, you know, as far as raising my family.
So it felt good for you to be there.
Yes.
Yeah. Was there another urban haircut shop in Blue Springs before yours?
Yes. It was Universal Barbers. I worked there as well with a guy named James Nolan. He closed down, and then I just opened up in the same strip mall.
Oh, so okay.
It was a blessing.
He was your mentor, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you face any problems in trying to open up your shop?
Surprisingly, I did not, because I had the same landlord as James Nolan. So when he closed down, it was just a telephone call away. Like, hey, you know what? I'm interested in reopening the shop. And mm-hmm. it was supposed to be in the same spot, only it didn't work out that way. So I just moved 8 doors down and...
I gather you cut hair of people of all kinds of colors.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how you got to do business in a city with only a 5% minority population.
Exactly.
Yeah. How's that going for you?
It's gone great. May 9th or May 1st, 2009 is when I opened. So I'm going on 10 years.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You gonna have a big party this year?
I was thinking about it. Seriously. I had one 5 years, so it's only right to have it 10 years.
Yeah. But then one day in 2017, you arrive at your barbershop only to find that it had been vandalized with a racial slur written on the windows of your barbershop. I'm wondering, when you first saw that, what went through your mind?
Well, my other barber seen it first. So they texted me and let me know. So it wasn't something that I didn't know happened when I pulled up.
Right.
So, when I actually pulled up and seen it, at first I was just like, man, it's a joke. And then I pulled up and seen it, and I was like, wow. Like, oh, wow. That's all I could really say. I know I haven't done anyone wrong. I hope I didn't cut anybody bad, you know, too bad to make them do that. But,
yeah.
You know,
but you were 8 years in at that point. That must have been a body blow.
It was. Once it sunk in, and I started thinking, who could do this? You know what I mean? Why would they do this? And I started taking it more personal than I was when I first initially got the call. Because I'm like, okay, well, there's other barbers in here. Maybe it was to somebody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, I took it personal. I'm African American, so... and I think anybody in Blue Springs, they were talking to that. They were trying to get a message across. And that message was, you know, we don't want you here. You know what I mean? So once I started internally digesting it and saying, dang, they don't want me here. And I've been here 8 years and I've been serving this community. And yeah, it took it hard. My family took it hard. My kids took it hard. The other barbers kind of just shrugged it off because they didn't live out there.
The other barbers in your shop?
The other barbers in the shop. That's, mm-hmm. There's three other barbers at the time.
Are they African-American?
Yes, mm-hmm. But they didn't live out there. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, well, they just go back to the city. It's not, he's like, hey, that's you. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, hey, we are a team. That's us. And then I went past the us to, whoa, that's everybody in Blue Springs they're talking to. And then once I seen the video and I seen that.
The video of what?
They actually have a video of the guy who did it.
Oh, you're kidding me.
But they don't have the face, just the build of the body. It seems like it was maybe a high school kid. So then I was like, okay, this is just some kids, you know what I mean? Trying to...
Don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, what was the reaction of other businesses around you? What was the reaction of your friends? How did you move forward?
Well... Everybody came together. I got over 50 calls.
From 50, who?
50 different visits just from strangers, you know, people from all kind of businesses around just calling. Hey, I heard what happened, and I'm sorry it happened to you. And I'm praying for you and things of that nature. People came, showered us with lunch every day that whole week. Man, I had... Yeah, we ate all week on people just coming and giving us gifts. And I had a couple of people, one in particular, I remember a lady came in. She said, my daughter heard about this in Boston. And she was a Blue Springs, grew up in Blue Springs. And she just wanted to bless you and gave me $100. Like, you know, gave me $100, say, hey, put this toward getting some cameras or something around. Because at the time, I didn't have any cameras.
Right.
But like I said, this was the first incident. And I didn't think that I needed any cameras, you know, being that there's police officers. That's always in that parking lot because we have ponchos, we have Fazoli's.
Right.
And, I mean, they love ponchos, so they stay there. Like, they're always there. So I'm like, nobody would be dumb enough to do this. But in the video, at the time, it was like 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then they ran off. And I was like, okay, these some kids. Like, if they were adults... Then I'm like, wow, I have to fear for my life because I don't know next time
right. They're
going to be waiting outside with
a pistol. James, how did this moment make you feel, this sort of rallying around you from strangers? I mean, you go from this dark moment where you see this on your window, mm-hmm. which was a bad moment, and then there's this rallying thing that happened to you.
It made me feel good. It made me feel a part of a community that cared, didn't care if I was African American. They took me in as family, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And they let me feel that sense of warmth of we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And man, I was holding them back. You know, I'm a man, I can't cry, is what they say. But mm-hmm. I was holding them back, man, all day because I just couldn't believe that it was back to back to back people. I mean, people were coming. I didn't even know it was a barbershop here. I just want to get my hair cut.
Did you cry?
I've gained clientele.
at home later that night?
At home. I think one tear came out one eye, I think.
Yeah. Well, Carson Ross, you're the mayor of this. What did you think when you heard about what happened to James and his barbershop?
Well, I monitor it, and I noticed that the community did rally around you. Mm-hmm. First of all, I have to ask the question, why would somebody do something like mm-hmm. that? And it's my analysis, a person that does something like that is ill-advised and ignorant, first of all. Mm-hmm. They are attention seekers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ignore ignorance, a lot of time you've defeated them already.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this particular case, what defeated them is the people rallying around you to where they did not accomplish what they were seeking to do.
Mm-hmm.
And... when that happens, you take all the wind out of their sail.
Mm-hmm. So what's your takeaway from this and how the community rallied to what James had to endure?
It just confirms what I've believed for a lot of years, because if Blue Springs and its surrounding area was a racist territory, mm-hmm. a community, I would not have been elected to office over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. First on the city council.
You're the first African mayor that Blue Springs ever had.
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been the first on a whole lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I first ran for office in 1979, so I've been in this business for a lot of years. But the key to it is largely, and you're going to have a few people that don't conform to inclusion and diversity, and you got that in every community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Blue Springs is not isolated, nor is any other community. But when you have people that will rally around what happened to show that you're welcome here, this is not something that we're going to tolerate. And certainly I was in touch with my police department.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and we still have not been able to identify. Now, what I was hoping that somebody, because you don't do something like that without telling somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you've defeated your purpose. You got to let it out to somebody that
right.
this happened. And I was hoping that somebody would step forward, even anonymously, and say, hey, we know who did this, mm-hmm. and this is who it is.
If
and that way we can act.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the integration of Blue Springs, the changing face of suburban Kansas City, and Kansas City itself, for that matter, as people move around the metro. Kansas City Star Story chronicled all this a couple of weeks ago. Travis tweeted this: Gladstone's a great area for people to move and invest in owning property. Very affordable and great schools. We're seeing more diverse neighborhoods, and it's a shift for some, but the kids are embracing it quite well. That's Travis from Gladstone. You know, Mayor, I'm just struck by the fact that what happened to James wasn't the only ugly incident that happened in Gladstone in 2017. There were complaints from school kids.
In Gladstone or Blue Springs?
I'm sorry, Blue Springs. There were complaints from school kids who said they'd been targets of racial taunting. Someone scrawled the N-word across a black girl's assignment paper that year. Other black students reported that when they gathered in the high school hallway, some white students called their group Africa. Is this, you know, growing pains in a suburban community? What is this, Mayor?
Again, you're going to have people that are ill-advised and ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, again, we will never segregate ourselves away from people that don't, this dehumanized kind
mm-hmm.
of people.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, I don't have any direct influence with the school district, but I can tell you that we were also working with the school district. Now, let me go back and tell you something that you probably don't know.
Yeah.
When I became mayor, there were some things that needed to be done in Blue Springs to help promote or develop acceptance of diversity. There were no African Americans on any boards or commissions when I became mayor. I changed that. We have African Americans on just about every board and commission in the city.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I saw is we didn't have a human relations commission in the city of Blue Springs. So my police chief and I worked with the Department of Justice. We got Dr. Emmanuel Gomsey. I don't know, you might know his name
mm-hmm.
because he's very prominent around
Absolutely.
Here when it comes to diversity. We had him facilitate putting together a human relations commission. And that's designed to deal with these kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So they avail themselves to work with the school district as well as working with the city when issues surfaced that they needed to be involved in to mitigate it.
How open has the city been to creating the Human Rights Commission and to diversifying your boards and commissions?
Very open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have the authority to do the appointing with the consent of the council, and nobody's going to challenge me on that.
Yeah. Does the mayor have a responsibility to do anything else? Is there a community-wide conversation that needs to be led, or maybe you've already led it? What else can a mayor do?
Well, the mayor, again, this particular mayor is not on the school board. So the only thing we can do is facilitate and work with the school district in dealing with issues that might happen within the school.
Right.
But the Human Relations Commission can expand beyond that and go wherever help is needed
mm-hmm.
to be able to deal with these kinds of issues. Now, about a year and a half ago, we put together, for lack of a better word, a charrette of all the stakeholders in Blue Springs.
What is that?
It's a gathering of stakeholders to try to figure out what is it about Blue Springs you like, and what is it about Blue Springs that can be improved to make it even better?
Mm-hmm.
And we had a packed house at the Christian Church on 7 Highway of people from the school district, business owners. We had people from all over the city,
mm-hmm.
the fire district. I mean, everybody came together to try to figure out, what do we do? What are some issues? What are some things we can be doing? And they went together and they started working on this. And we ended up having a number of recommendations, and it's being convened by the Spirit Council, and I've got a meeting with them next week to talk about some of their recommendations. And certainly as mayor, I've got to put a cost to it. Mm-hmm. You've got to count the cost if there are dollars involved in it, because our budget is already in place mm-hmm. For this fiscal year. But we have our police chief, I have my city administrator, and we're meeting with some citizens to kind of go over what those recommendations are and what they see as the vision for accomplishing some of these things, mm-hmm. and if there's a cost involved in it.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole community comes together when there is a need to respond to whatever the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel real good about that. If you take a look at Eastern Jackson County, again, people that report to me in the city council as a city administrator have two judges, city attorney, and a prosecuting attorney.
Right.
On those positions, I do the appointing, and some of them with the consent of the council, and some of them not with the consent
right.
of the city council. We have, for the first time in Blue Springs, a female judge that I appointed.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the opportunity to appoint two female city attorneys.
So you're diversifying the community.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let me just
And lastly, this is the one that I want you to listen to very carefully.
Yeah.
For the first time, Blue Springs has a female prosecuting attorney that happens to be African-American.
Hmm. And that makes a difference.
Oh, yeah, it makes a difference, because a lot of people who go through your court system are African-American. And although I don't want her giving you a break just because you're an African-American, but it gives them a level of comfort that I want to mm-hmm. be treated fairly,
you
because
know,
somebody's there.
Let me go back to James like here me. Real quick, Mayor, if I could. You know, these different incidents that I described that have occurred in the schools and the vandalism to your shop window, is this growing pains in the community, James? How do you look at it?
Well, I would say, in regards to the school and students calling a certain area in the school Africa, it's been like that for years. So when someone says that, oh, this is new, or this is something that I'm just now hearing, no.
That's been going on.
It's been going on for years.
Is it getting better? What do you hear?
In the barbershop, I hear a lot of stuff.
I bet you do.
So I want to be a part of what you got going on, because I got a lot of insight. But I would say it's something that they tolerate it, and I don't think they should tolerate. They have programs put within the school, like somebody, a senior, will put together something, but she can only do so much.
Right.
We need some adults that are going to step forward and say, hey, this is what we need to be teaching at home, because it starts at home. But as far as growing pains, I would say this is just something that comes with the territory, mm-hmm. moving in the suburbs as an African-American.
And so eyes have to be open. This stuff goes on. And
yes.
Maybe someday you hope it begins to tail away.
Yes. But like you said, it's some people that's ignorant. It's some people who are being taught this stuff and thinking that it's right when it's really wrong, that they're going to continue to do it until something happens.
Okay. We're going to have to leave our conversation there about Blue Springs. We were joined by James Price. You just heard his voice, the owner of Turnin' Heads Barbershop. James, thanks for your time today. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Mayor Carson Ross was here, a former state representative as well. Carson, always great to see you. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.
You bet. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, the Metro's foremost reporter on downtown development, that's Kevin Collison. He'll catch us up on the latest projects changing Kansas City's landscape. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.